Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to discuss women's role in the military, and we're going to learn about the Agent Orange Blue Water Navy bill that recently passed Congress. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Dating back to the American Revolutionary War, women have served valiantly in our country's conflicts. The legend of Molly Pitcher told us the story of a brave woman who took the fight to our enemy in our battle for independence. As the story goes, Molly took charge of a cannon in the midst of a battle in New Jersey and gave the Redcoats hell. As time moved on and in the face of resistance, women in our military continued to lend their force to our fight. In doing so, they broke through barriers built by those who clung to outdated ideals and wrong-headed prejudices. Despite this uphill battle against gender discrimination, women have made important impacts to our every battle. From our junior ranks to our most senior commanders, women perform many vital roles and contribute every day to the success of our team. The women who serve in your Minnesota National Guard are just as tough, just as smart, and just as capable of leading our soldiers and airmen as any man. I'm proud to have them on our team.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We have some special guests in the studio today, and the first one is Minnesota National Guard's first general officer on the air side, Brigadier General Sandy Best. General, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
General, can you share with our listeners how many years have you been in the military, and how long ago was it you got pinned as a general?
I have been in the Minnesota Air National Guard for 35 years, and I've been a general officer now for 3.5 years. And when I was promoted, I remember what I said in one of my acceptance remarks was, I might be the first, but I won't be the last.
Well, and that's been true, because since then, the Army National Guard got their first lady general, General Joanna Clyburn.
Yes.
And we're going to meet in the second segment today, the Minnesota National Guard's third female general. And that's a surprise for now. But I want to talk about you for a bit. What's your current position with the Minnesota National Guard?
So I am currently the chief of staff of the Minnesota Air National Guard.
Okay. And I understand that you're taking on some new duties.
I am. I have just recently, in April, been named as the special assistant to the chief of the National Guard Bureau on diversity and inclusion. And that position is in Arlington, so I'll be maintaining a full-time job with the Minnesota Air National Guard and then and the Minnesota National Guard, and then spending probably a week, at least a week, a month in Arlington, Virginia.
Now, we've seen in the past where General Jensen, I believe, had what they called a dual-hatted position. He was serving in Africa and he was serving here on the air side. This must be something similar.
It is similar. It started out as a dual hat, so that's what I am right now. And it'll still be a dual hat, but there will be some transitioning in September where my military position will be not full-time, but my military position will belong out there, and my full-time position will still be back here in the state. So it is a dual hat.
So you'll have two slots, one for one national and one in the state.
Yes.
Now, in Minnesota, we've been talking about diversity and inclusion for years. We've been on the air for 9 years, and we've been talking about this over and over and over again, and you and I have talked about it a lot. Is this something that the national across all the states are trying to push a little harder?
Absolutely. Not just the military, but even in the civilian industry. You know, diversity and inclusion, really it's inclusion that helps build a diverse force. And one of the reasons that I believe that I was selected for this national position is because of the great things that the Minnesota National Guard is doing, both on the Army and the air side.
In general, I think you and I have talked about it before. When I served in Vietnam almost 50 years ago, it was mostly men. But today, there's a large proportion of the members of the Minnesota National Guard that are women and minorities.
Absolutely, yes. In fact, our Minnesota, that's basically what every state tries to do, is make their National Guard reflective of the communities that they serve in. So here in Minnesota, we're continuing to make progress. We have 24% in the Air, 19% in the Army. So overall, we have about 19.3% females in the Minnesota National Guard, which is higher than both the active duty Air Force, the active duty Army, and then also the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard at large. And then on the diversity numbers, we also have about 17.5% of our force combined is diverse.
So once again, Minnesota's leading the way.
Absolutely. And since we started this, like you said, we've been talking about it for many years, but we really started tracking our progress in 2011. And from 2011 to present, we've doubled our diversity representation in the Minnesota National Guard.
We're speaking with Brigadier General Sandy Best on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, with your new position national, does that mean you're going to be going around to the other state National Guards and sharing best practices?
Yes.
Sandy Best, General Best, best practices. Here we go.
Yes. That means that we do have the Chief of the National Guard Bureau, General Engel, has a Joint Diversity Executive Council, just like General Jensen has a diversity council here in Minnesota. And so through that Joint Diversity Executive Council, it connects us to the 54 states and territories. And that's exactly what it is trying to share best practices. And that's what the National Guard enterprise needs to do in order to recruit and retain the best talent to fight and win America's wars and respond to domestic emergencies on the state side.
So, General, as you dig deeper into this national position, does that mean there's going to be some leadership changes in the Minnesota Air National Guard?
Yes, indeed. So, effective September 1st, where I'll be taking this national position militarily, we will be promoting another new general officer in the Minnesota National Guard, and that will be Colonel Dan Gabrielli, who is currently the 133rd Airlift Wing Commander. And so he will be stepping up to take on the military position of Chief of Staff for the Minnesota Air National Guard. And we look forward to that ceremony on September 14th. And then behind him will create more change and more leadership change. And that will be Colonel Jim Cleet, who's currently serving as the Vice Commander. And recently you had on your show Chief Master Sergeant Mark Rukavina, who is the State Command Chief for the Minnesota Air National Guard, following Chief Master Sergeant Paul Kessler as he retired. Colonel Cleet and Colonel Dan Gabrielli will be the will be promoted. Colonel Cleet to the Wing Commander in August, and Colonel Gabrielli to General Officer in September.
Very good, ma'am. Now, it seems like it was just yesterday, but we had Colonel Gabrielli on, who was commander of the 133rd, and we had on the commander of 148th, who has since been pinned as a general, and now Colonel Gabrielli's been pinned, and we had those two kind of competing against each other about all the awards they were winning in both of those wings, and it was kind of fun to have them in here. But we'll have to try that again.
That would be fantastic. That's something the Minnesota National Guard does really well, and that's growing leaders and building our bench so that the next people are ready when people either retire or move on to new opportunities.
Next person up.
Yes, absolutely.
In my day, it was next man up, but today it's the next best qualified person up.
Absolutely.
And that's the times have changed, and it's all for the good, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, General, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you to introduce the Minnesota National Guard's newest general officer, and we'll meet that officer and find out about her background. And later in the show, we're going to talk about the Women's Leadership Conference that's coming up. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Brigadier General Sandy Best about the women's role in the military these days, and especially so far in the Air National Guard side. But General Best, we've got a special guest in the studio today, the newest general officer in the Minnesota National Guard. Would you like to introduce her?
I would love to. Thank you. I would like to introduce my colleague from the Minnesota Army National Guard, my fellow general officer, my battle buddy, my wingman, and also a science, technology, engineering, and math guru, our newest general in the Minnesota National Guard, General Stephanie Horvath.
General Horvath, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here with you and, of course, with General Sandy Best. It's awesome. Thanks.
Now, I understand that you are now the director of the Joint Staff for the Minnesota National Guard, responsible for overseeing domestic operations. Citizen soldier, Brigadier General Horvath, is also Chief Business Technology Officer, working for Minnesota Information Technology Services, responsible for IT service delivery to several Minnesota executive branch boards, councils, and commissions, and the newest female Brigadier General in the Army National Guard. Congratulations, General.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here. Great to talk about assuming a significant key leadership position in the Minnesota Army National Guard. And also, of course, I love to talk about technology. So any questions you want to talk about technology, let's have that conversation. It'd be fun.
We'll do that. But first, can you tell me how many years have you been in the military?
Tom, it's going on, you can measure it in decades now, going on three decades. And so a lot has changed from a time when I was in high school and I was 17 years old and my parents actually had to sign me up because I couldn't put my signature on that paperwork and send me off to basic training. And so, you know, my parents have been there for me every step of the way all through these last three decades, which has included, you know, time working with combat engineering for the state of North Dakota. Then I transferred to Minnesota around 1997 and then became a part of the 34th Infantry Division and have had a couple deployments and working in technology along the way. And so before you know it, three decades has gone by.
General, I understand your father is a Vietnam Navy veteran and that he told you that I'm not going to salute you until you're a general.
He did. And Tom, he's been saying that for many years. When I was promoted to lieutenant colonel 8 years ago, that's when he really started to think to himself. And he later told me, wow, it looks like you could actually, you know, attain the rank of general. So yes, in the last 3 years, I've heard that quite a few times from him. I will salute you when you're a general officer. And as you could see, it happened.
And I saw in the paper, he was quoted saying, it's really a different world. I'm very proud of what she's done. She did it on her own. And he unfolded his North Dakota VFW 753 cap, placed it on his head, and saluted his daughter, the general. I bet he was practicing for a while to get it just right.
You know, not too shabby. It was a pretty snappy salute, I have to admit. He pulled that right out, and it was just a great moment. Great moment, and I was just so pleased that it was captured in a photograph. That was just awesome because he didn't plan. He didn't talk to anybody. He was just there and gave that salute, and someone was there to capture the moment.
Proud moment for Dad.
Yes. Yep. Definitely.
I'll bet you remember that one for a while. General, your background is in technology, and you were deployed, I understand, as the only woman of a whole deployment and kind of had to earn your stripes in terms of, can she do this job?
Right. So this is back in 2003. I deployed with an infantry battalion to the 135 headquartered out of Mankato. A great battalion, great group of soldiers, 300 men in that infantry battalion, and I was their one single female, and I was their signal officer in charge of radio communications, computer networks, unclassified networks, classified networks, everything you can imagine to send the voice of the commander to the troops.
And how long did it take for them to have faith in your ability to keep everything running?
You know, I think fairly early on, because there was, in those days in 2003, there was quite a ramp up. You'd mobilize, There's a lot of training to do, and so everybody's busy, and they just right away could see that I could run, I could fire a weapon, and I could, as I've said before, I could fix their printer issues, and that's when they knew that they could rely upon me.
We're speaking with Brigadier General Sandy Best and Brigadier General Stephanie Horvath on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, General Horvath, when you were doing that IT stuff, did you have any, back then, any idea that cybersecurity was going to be so big?
You know, yes, but it would be General Nash who really pointed me in the direction to start formalizing a more concrete strategy towards cybersecurity, and that was back in 2012. And so since then, I've more aggressively pursued cybersecurity strategy, tactics, procedures. And then we, of course, in the military, we have a very secure network, or we spend a lot of time rigorously securing our network and our endpoints, our computers, everything. I could go on until your eyes glazed over about cybersecurity. There's just so much to say. But now what's been awesome is to take that cybersecurity strategy and share information across to all agencies, all other state agencies, so we can all kind of work together to secure computers, mobile devices, because there's such a need. And nobody really quite understood that the internet, when first developed, just had a lot of, it was insecure by design. It was just more open to allow that communication to take place. And unfortunately, now we're really having to battle through and secure this whole domain, because you just have people who, adversaries, and people who are trying to take advantage within the cyber domain.
General, I think you're right. When the internet first came out, everybody's trying to figure out how to use it, how to use it as a tool. What's it going to happen? And of course, we've seen it evolve, and now it's insidious. It's in our lives every minute, every day. And the bad guys out there, the bad players, have also figured out how to use it to usurp our authority. And of course, in the military, we have such sophisticated weaponry now. It's great stuff, but it doesn't work if somebody infiltrates your system and shuts it down. So it's going to be, I think, a big umbrella and more important as the years go by.
Yes. No, absolutely. I think it's good to have a very eyes wide open approach. And there are a lot of efforts and initiatives right now to secure all systems, whether it's communication systems or our weapon systems, as you talk about. A lot of good work in a lot of sharing of information, whereas, 5 or 6 years ago, the groups did not share information as well as they do now. Now you see everyone collaborating a little bit more effectively to secure everything that is most important for our communication systems, for our navigation systems, for weapon systems. And that, as you mentioned earlier, is just going to become more important going forward.
So, General, in your new position, will you be still focusing on cybersecurity?
Certainly one of the many aspects that I will be focusing on. We do see an increase in state emergencies across the nation. And so the National Guard is just getting tasked and requested to respond more and more and more. In 2017, I actually was a part of post-hurricane relief support efforts down in the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. And so as many states are dealing with a lot of different emergencies, states help each other out, provide the resources, provide the manpower to deal with whatever the emergency is at the time. And so cybersecurity will certainly be one aspect, but there are a lot of other emergencies that we're called to respond to.
Well, thank you, General. General Best, General Horvath, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we want to talk about the upcoming Women's Leadership Forum for the Minnesota National Guard. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk about the Minnesota National Guard's Women's Leadership Forum. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Minnesota's largest veteran career fair will be held on July 24th from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Earl Brown Heritage Center in Brooklyn Center. If you're a current or former U.S. military service member and looking for a job, or if you're interested in exploring new careers or educational opportunities, come to the largest veterans career fair in the Midwest. More than 100 of Minnesota's best employers with current job openings will be there and anxious to talk to you all in one place. This annual free event is organized and hosted by the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Visit MinnesotaVeteran.org for more information.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. My guests today have been Brigadier General Sandy Best from the Minnesota Air National Guard and Brigadier General Stephanie Horvath, our newest Brigadier General in the Army National Guard. And on this segment, we want to talk, General Best, about an event called the Women's Leadership Forum. Can you tell us, this has happened in years past because you've been on and we've talked about this, but can you tell me what is it and why is it important?
Sure. Excuse me. Yes, I can. We have been doing the Women's Leadership Forum for 5 years. This will be our fifth year. And it really started out informally where our first senior enlisted advisor, Sergeant Major Cynthia Kahlberg, she brought a group of enlisted primarily Air Force and Army personnel together to do an informal career development program. And it was probably about 150 people held at the 133rd Airlift Wing. And it was so positively received that one of our 133rd Airlift Wing Lieutenant Colonels, Lieutenant Colonel Barb Pasternak, she's now a colonel, she led the charge to bring it up and make it a very professional an event. And so then we moved on and we've held it annually ever since. And it's grown in numbers to 300. The highest has been close to 700. Right now we settled in about 350 to 400 men and women, officer and enlisted, Air Force and Army National Guard members that attend this event annually.
General, you mentioned Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. She was the first senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General in the history of the Minnesota National Guard. And, of course, you were the first general officer in the Minnesota Air National Guard. Things have changed a lot in the last decade or two, haven't they?
They sure have. And really, we attribute the Women's Leadership Forum to a lot of growth and the ability to just have conversations, because we know for women to excel that we need the support of men in the organization. And so this is just a great leadership forum that is, because leadership skills apply to both men and women. And so it's the same skills that would be beneficial to both men and women that we talk about at these forums. But we have a focus on women because sometimes they don't always have access to leaders. And so it's really all about the professional development and creating an environment where we target and want to include women and diverse members of our organization.
General Horvath, I understand you've had some great mentors in your military career. Did they help you navigate your way up to general officer?
Oh, absolutely, Tom. Great question. I mean, certainly in the military, we go through a lot of evaluations. I mean, on a daily basis, and more specifically, annually, we have an evaluation where our raters and senior raters, you know, call out our performance for everything good or everything that we need to improve on. And so, you know, I did not make the rank of general officer because of 1 year. It was, you know, 20, 30 years where raters and senior raters mentored me, called up my performance, attributed my good work so that I could keep achieving higher and higher ranks in the military. So, yes, I've had a lot of great, mostly male mentors, because I had mostly male raters and senior raters. Now, when General Best was promoted, and even before she was promoted to the rank of general officer as a colonel, she has always been a great mentor just by her example. We didn't always work together, but just any time we could engage, it was so affirming, and it was just enlightening and illuminating just to be in the meeting together with her. So that is, you know, that's an example. She's an example of great female mentorship in our National Guard organization.
General Best, since you were the first Lady General of the Minnesota National Guard, I would guess that you and General Clyborn and now General Horvath, do the young female NCOs and officers look to you for guidance? How do I navigate this career? How do I keep moving forward?
Yes, I mean, I think mentorship is really a personal, you know, who people reach out to. You want to reach out to people that kind of emulate the values that you like in leaders. And so, yes, I do think I didn't realize until probably I was a lieutenant colonel how important it was for junior female members of our organization to see women at the top excelling so that they knew that they could. And our very first year of the Women's Leadership Forum, we had a 4-star general who participated. We've had one of the first females that made it through Army Ranger School. This year, it's going to be held at Best Buy corporate headquarters, and we are going to have their very first female CEO, Corey Berry, who's going to be a keynote speaker at our event, and we're very excited about that.
So anybody that signs up for this, and this is for young women, to see that the glass ceilings are broken and you can go anywhere you want to go. But it's also open to some of the young men to experience the same type of information and to look and find a way to navigate their way through their career. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And so we have kept that as a main point. This is definitely a leadership forum, but it is open to all, right? There is just no reverse where we would prevent others from not attending this event. For it to be more of a shared experience is exceptional, too. There's a lot of effort that goes into what are the leading speakers, who are the leading speakers who can bring an interesting voice into the forum, because it is about individual development. And that is like this interesting enhancement to this leadership forum, because it is so, it's designed by both Air and Army at all ranks. So given their perspective into what would be a great agenda for this entire leadership forum.
General Best, can you tell us when is this event going to take place and how do they sign up to go to it?
Yes, we have a Facebook page that's called Women's Leadership Forum that they can access to be able to attend. It's going to be held on the first Saturday of September, which is September 7th.
And where will it be?
And it was going to be held at Best Buy corporate headquarters. This is the second year that we've done it at Best Buy corporate headquarters. And the other neat thing about our Women's Leadership Forum is that each year we have partnered with one of our outstanding yellow ribbon company providers to host this event. And Best Buy corporate headquarters can allow us to go, you know, really big if we need to. But we've had great success with multiple corporate partners.
And of course, that's been a byproduct of the Yellow Ribbon networks that have been put together over the course of the last 10 years or so. And I think Annette Kuiper is here today. We're going to talk to her later. And there's many corporations in Twin Cities that are supporting our military members and their families. And it's great to hear that Best Buy is still participating in that. General Horvath, we just got a couple of minutes left. Have you got any messages for the young ladies out there that might be listening and thinking, maybe I might enjoy a career in the Minnesota Guard?
The National Guard is now, more so than ever, an organization that provides opportunities and acceptance. And really, if you're looking to develop leadership skills, learning to get into areas, everything from engineering, military intelligence, medical, we offer a lot of job career opportunities as well. And it really is an organization that is living this concept of being a learning organization. We're not perfect. Things go wrong. But we are very responsive to state, government, and national needs. And if you want to develop as an individual, both in career or leadership skills, this is an organization to really consider joining.
Thank you, General Horvath, and congratulations on your promotion to Brigadier General. General Best, we just got about 30 seconds left. Do you think the young ladies out there should join the Air National Guard?
I absolutely think whether it's the Air or the Army or any branch of the service that they should definitely join. Of course, you and I both have some ties to the Air side of it, but I would say the greatest benefit of being a leader in the Minnesota National Guard is helping people realize their dreams. And there's so many opportunities available in the Minnesota National Guard for education, learning technical skills, and building friendships that will last a lifetime.
Generals, thanks for joining us today. That was Brigadier General Sandy Best and Brigadier General Stephanie Horvath on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to explore the new Agent Orange Blue Water Navy bill that recently passed Congress. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to talk about the Agent Orange Blue Water Navy bill. And joining me to talk about that is Greg Peterson, who is the Brown County Veteran Service Officer and also the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. Greg, good to have you here in the studio today.
Hey, thanks a bunch, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
Greg, for some of those people that may not have heard you, you served quite a few years in the United States Air Force.
I did. I was in a little over 23 years as a career aviator. I was a loadmaster.
And how long have you been a County Veteran Service Officer?
15 years already. It's really going by fast, faster than my Air Force career.
Time flies, doesn't it?
When you're having fun.
Well, Greg, for a lot of my generation, I'm a Vietnam veteran. We've been watching the legislation that would make a difference between what was called the Brown Water Navy and the Blue Water Navy when it comes to exposure to Agent Orange. And the Brown Water Navy was the River Navy, and they've been covered for what's called presumptive diseases for a while.
That's correct, yep.
And now Congress has just passed a bill called the Blue Water Agent Orange Bill. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it was a bill that went through Congress and has been signed into law by the president, now called Public Law Number 116-23, the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act of 2019, which was signed into law June 25th of this year. The law will take effect 1st of January next year, 2020.
Now, I understand that the VA is in the process of hiring additional staff and getting ready for what could be a surge of new claims?
Well, they are. Secretary Wilkie, Secretary of the VA, used a loophole in the law to put everything Blue Water Agent Orange on hold, or the official term is they have stayed all of those claims until the 1st of January. And they're going to use that time to hire more staff, to train them on the specifics of the different diseases that there are. There's some other laws that would apply as to the dating of payments, because everything that is a presumptive disease or condition will also bring with it a disability rating, and with that comes disability compensation. So they're doing that to hire new people. They're actually going to hire an outside contractor to establish a list of ships, a ship's list, that were in the 12-mile nautical blue water of Vietnam and Cambodia, which swings down around the south end of Vietnam.
So if anyone served in the Navy on the ocean and their ship was not more than 12 miles offshore of Vietnam or Cambodia, they are considered covered?
They are they're presumed to have been exposed to the herbicide Agent Orange. And, you know, not just the Navy, but there could be Army personnel that were on Navy ships. Marine Corps certainly would have been on Navy ships providing security. We call it the Blue Water Navy, but anyone that was out there in the armed forces of the United States would now be presumed to have been exposed to the herbicide Agent Orange. And it breaks down the barrier of filing a disability claim.
Now, some of my fellow Vietnam veterans are getting kind of old, and I imagine some of our Navy veterans maybe have already died.
I would think so.
If they are considered to have been on a ship that was not more than 12 miles offshore and had one of these presumptive diseases and maybe did die, is that the end of it, or is there some benefits available for their family?
Oh, absolutely. If they have a living widow, living spouse, That person can file a claim for what's called dependency and indemnity compensation. We just call it DIC for short. It is a tax-free monthly benefit, pays about $1,385 a month right now. There's a higher rate if someone would be in assisted living or a nursing home. Goes along with that is a property tax exemption, homestead property tax exemption here in the state of Minnesota for those survivors. There could be free education benefits for the children of a veteran, even if those children are up to the age of 61. Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and Minnesota MNSCU, the public schools, will waive tuition for anyone whose parent died of a service-related disability.
Now, Greg, I understand that this new law also grants benefits to spina bifida children of Thailand vets.
That's right. Now, that's one that I have very little experience with, but spina bifida is a condition, I believe, where the spine is open, exposed upon birth. Previously, only was granted to veterans, children. The actual child is the one that receives the financial benefits.
So this is part of the research where they've determined that some of the ailments from exposure to Agent Orange could be multi-generational.
That's right, very much so. The law also expands the date or the timeline for where the herbicide was used along the DMZ in Korea, rolls that back another year back to 1967, I believe it is.
And I see here it's now for the Korean DMZ, it's September 1967 to July 1969. And I don't think I've ever heard anything about
that's
Korean veterans.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird one. There are certain units, and they're all named. All our service officers have those, but that served right along the DMZ in Korea. Now, anyone listening to this, don't get it mixed up. If you were in the Korean War, this does not apply. It applies to Vietnam-era veterans that served along the Korean DMZ, like you said, 67 to
September 67 to July 1969. We're speaking with Greg Peterson, the Brown County Veteran Service Officer on Minnesota Military Radio. And Greg, I want to just get into this a little bit now because we've talked about presumptive conditions or presumptive diseases that have been presumed to have been caused by exposure to Agent Orange. Can you run through a few of those?
I sure can. There's about 40 that are on the list. A lot of them are cancers. The most common that I see are diabetes, heart disease, prostate cancer. But any of the chronic B-cell leukemias, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, multiple myeloma, Parkinson's disease is so prevalent nowadays that's on there. Prostate cancers, respiratory cancers, anything where you would have breathed in, the lungs, the bronchus, the larynx, or the trachea. I just had one last week. And it was liposarcoma. Had to look it up. But it is cancer of the fat cells.
So these are conditions that people that have been exposed to Agent Orange have in a much higher incident than the normal population.
Absolutely.
And so they've been presumed to have been caused. And where can they find a list of those diseases? Is that available in the VA hospital?
It would be on the VA website. We probably have it out on our state association website, too. But anybody that you want to Google just VA and Agent Orange or presumptive conditions. Now, this doesn't mean that you might have bladder cancer, and if you believe it came from Agent Orange, you certainly are welcome to file a claim. But it will go under much more scrutiny than the list of presumptives. Nowadays, if you have a presumptive condition, it's your diagnosis, you file a claim with your service officer, it's going to get approved.
Okay, now, Greg, I think there's probably two types of claims out there. There's probably some Blue Water Navy folks that have already filed claims that have been maybe denied.
Lots of them.
And there's probably some out there that never filed the claims because they didn't think they had a chance. Just because they're not going to process these till January 1, 2020, you should start filing that claim process as soon as possible, right? That's important.
Absolutely. Because we are always talking about the date of claim. So let's file a claim today. The date of claim will be the 1st of August, 2019. If it rolls through and they apply what's called the NEMR rule, the date of benefits will be 1 year earlier. And if we're talking prostate cancer, that's a 100% rating. That's $3,200 a month, tax-free. So get 2 years of it instead of one. Don't wait. Everything, data claim is always the first of the next month. So as much stuff as we can get in July, data claim will be the first of August 2019.
So, Greg, we're just about out of time. You're here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. There's one in every county, at least one.
At least one.
And for all our veterans, we talk all the time, get your DD-214, your discharge, go meet your county veteran service officer, get registered with them. You might not need them now, but you might need them later.
That's right. You know, come on in. Even if you don't know what to ask for, just ask this. I don't know what my benefits are. Can you tell me? And come
chat.
On in and sit down, and we'll have a chat.
Have a chat, see what you can do. And for all our fellow veterans that are Blue Water Navy veterans that served within 12 miles of Vietnam or Cambodia, get in and talk to your county veteran service officer today. See if they can help you get some coverage. Greg, I want to thank you for joining us today in the studio for Minnesota Military Radio.
It's been a pleasure. I enjoyed it very much, Tom.
That was Greg Peterson, the Brown County Veteran Service Officer and the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Brigadier General Sandy Best, Brigadier General Stephanie Horvath, Greg Peterson, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk about the upcoming MACV stand-downs and speak with the Senior Enlisted Advisor for the Minnesota National Guard. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.